I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma.
Hello, I am Megan Hastings, and we are the Cats and Jammer Follies. In these COVID-19 times, as we all are sequestered in our homes, unless, of course, you are an essential worker, that leaves a lot of time in one's own mind to reflect on times past, joys, hardships, family and friends, and so much of that revolves around travel, going from one city to another to see loved ones or simply to explore. I have, for the most part of my life, been a wanderer of sorts. I lived in many places for many reasons, but I always, always loved to come home. At the present time, no one is allowed to travel physically around this beautiful globe, and so I've asked a whole bunch of people to write and share some of their travel tales with me, and with you. I'm looking for heartfelt human connection stories, and today I have one of my all-time favorite writers in the whole world, a Mr. Adam Cohn. As we are married, we share many tales, although often from very different perspectives. And today, we are each going to read a story from childhood that, oddly, both involves a Greyhound bus and a grandmother in the 1970s. But first, I want to read an excerpt from a journal of mine from when I first started traveling on my own. Not because it's good, in fact, it's pretty terrible, but it's honest. And because I'd like to point out to the young people out there that it doesn't have to be good. The whole point is to capture the memory and tone. Later in life, you can fill it in more poetically. But you might not remember all the finite details like when you were 16 or 17 or whatever. So journaling is a great habit to get into for traveling. In fact, I wish I had done it better. But what can you do? And here goes. July 9th. 1989. Last night we spent in Bruges, a beautiful city by the northern coast of Belgium. It's a medieval city. Effin' incredible. Amsterdam was cool, but Bruges was beautiful. We spent the night walking around and tried to sleep under a windmill in a park, but after about 2 hours we left and went to a bar where there was a party going on. We were talking to all the locals, and at 5:30 a.m., this one, Jean-Marc, offers us a place to go and stay at his house. But we walked outside, and it was all misty. Just couldn't go in yet, so he offered to show us around. It was effing incredible. He drove us to the sea, 6 a.m., calm, dark blue, and only us. We were all so tired, though, after that. After a bit, we just had to turn back. He took us to his home in the country. They're all artists. It was beautiful. Reminded me a lot of my own house, filled with art, etc. We slept only a couple hours and left. And left for a train in for Berlin in the morning. It took us one too many hours to get there, but once we arrived, it was all worth it. That is the mind of a 16-year-old traveling. Pretty non-very specific, but fun nonetheless. It was good times. And now we're going to talk with Mr. Adam Cohn, who's going to read us one of his excerpts of a story, again, about his grandmother traveling on a Greyhound bus.
Megan, it's been so awesome getting to hear your tales at home, and then just to hear that there is a larger audience for a 16-year-old who swears and makes her way with cigarettes across the continents. I'm honored to be here. And this was a little essay that was read for a Vashon Live project that I do. And it's nice to have, again, a larger audience to share it with in regards to my own grandmother, Sophie, in South Dakota. So thanks. I guess I'll just kind of begin. I write a lot about my mother's family, people who live here, but most of my family live in South Dakota. And I started trying to think about my father's family and reading for them. But the reality is that how we got there became equally of interest. And my family was of the economic environment that needed to take buses, Greyhound buses. So this is an essay about getting actually to South Dakota called The Bus Trip.
Thank you for sharing it.
It takes the better part of 2 days to reach Sioux Falls by Greyhound bus from Seattle. When I was little, this is how my family traveled to visit relatives and friends. People missed and who themselves did not travel. As a young person, the bus was intriguing, and I was excited as I packed my clear plastic shopping bag, bright orange and red flowers printed along its sides, and red nylon handles as well. King Tutankhamun had made his first excursion to America the summer before. He arrived, gold mask and canopic jars intact, to Seattle, and we visited him at the Modern Art Pavilion at Seattle Center. Later the same year, we saw him again in the much larger galleries of the Art Institute in Chicago on another bus trip to see my father's brother, my Uncle Chuck, and his wife Evelyn. I liked Chicago, and the historical show had a huge impact on my then 10-year-old self, so much so that if asked what interested in me, I would answer with confidence, Egyptology, pause, and finish with Middle Kingdom pharaohs. This answer usually would be met with a blank expression by the adults who quizzed me, and I would be again left alone to my tablet of blank paper, my magic markers, and books on ancient kingdoms and Nile River Delta culture. This being said, my own plastic shopping bag was well stocked with peanut M&Ms, my favorite food, and books on Egypt, including a favorite, a volume on mummification called Wrapped for Eternity. I was ready to go. The bus left in the evening from Seattle, and the station itself, like many in other cities, was a dark place to negotiate. At the time of these family trips, Burger King held the position of being the only place to eat, aside from the vending machines near the arcade and near the lineup of molded black fiberglass chairs that held individual televisions one could pay for with quarters and spend a luxurious 15 or so minutes in general escape of the station, watching grainy black and white episodes of Laverne and Shirley or maybe Happy Days. When the time ran out, the TV simply went dark, and then with little left to do but wait, it was common to stand as discreetly as one could behind others watching shows, at least close enough to hear the audio and canned laughter present within the situation comedy. Hamburgers and fries eaten, Cokes drank, and finally it is time to board. Long, sleek machines with silver dogs painted on either side. The buses stand tall and are lit softly on the interior with blue guide lights that illuminate the rubberized corridor to the back, or rather, the rear of the coach. This sentence, the rear of the coach, will be heard many times over the bus's intercom from the driver. All the way over the mountains, all the way to Spokane, Idaho, and well into Butte, Montana. The intercom will direct travelers to use the facilities, that is, the unfortunate toilet, located to the rear of the coach. In addition, smoking of cigarettes shall be confined, another good sentence used by the driver, to the last three rows of seats. These five or six seats, set near each other and directly in front of the mobile latrine, were in theory equipped with ventilating fans, which pull the cigarette smoke away and replace a carcinogenous air with fresher-scented, clean air. It is important to note these built-in smoke lighters almost always were not operational, either jammed or simply worn out, leaving the buses to smell strongly of old cigarettes and the strong blue liquid that resided under the toilet lid nearby. And, of course, the general, often gamey scent of all passengers and their belongings, ourselves included. Seated somewhere in the relative safety of the bus's middle, non-smoking interior, I contented myself near my family, reading quietly about Mesopotamia and cuneiform writing, all the while enjoying generous amounts of Cheez-Its and M&Ms and mini cans of Coca-Cola, the half-size can bought special for this bus trip. America and the Golden West on view outside the giant tinted windows. It is an odd sensation to fall asleep in public in all of one's clothes and shoes, perhaps a coat for a blanket, There is something pleasantly reassuring and hard to articulate in words, the humanity of shared rest, sleep among humans and animals, be it at a campfire or airplane or even bus. We wake to a new landscape, all of us, that is, except my mother, who understandably has been awake all night during the bus's many late night stops, making sure that myself and my two younger brothers are safe. My father, however, is fast asleep, head down, with a copy of Richard Adams' Watership Down open on his lap. I can see blue Bic pen marks he has made in his palm and up the side of his arm when space ran out within the worn margins of his book in hand. Notes, ideas, poems that later I would come to understand as structurally very similar to my own. Ideas relating to color and natural imagery, though even early on, my own work would often be caught within the personal nostalgia surrounding history and the people, events that comprise those moments. Some kind of ardent documentation of sorts, of places and or people who aren't here anymore. This idea fascinated me always, and I would so often be caught trying to remember these moments in time. I still am. The little mouse in Leo Leoni's colorful book, Frederick, a story of a field mouse, who, though not readily preparing for the coming winter, though not saving grain and seeds to eat when there is snow and cold, was instead collecting visions of color. Yellow-gold sun, warm greens and reds, blues of sky to share with his mouse family when color and warmth of sun is scarce or not at all. This book and creature still best describes what it is to know my father, who ironically is also named Fred, like the poet Field Mouse he reminds me of. The tall forests of Douglas fir in the northwest are replaced by white pine and eventually ponderosa, large spaces of uninterrupted prairie and blue mountains on a far range that is Montana. The bus at some point in the night changed drivers. There are still the generalized commands and regulatory monologues, but the accent is southern, at least to my ears, and the driver is dark in color. He is jovial, and I can hear laughter from the front of the coach, a place, these first few rows, where the seats are reserved for elderly passengers, as well as riders who may be handicapped, either physically or, as sometimes the case may be, mentally different from ourselves. Older women, spinsters, my mother calls them, occupy the driver's attention as we continue on into the badlands of South Dakota. Although the bus is cool, its air-conditioned interior is quite different than the blast of heat and exhaust that comes when the front door is opened. We file out, as with everyone else, and the driver gives us a generous warning that the bus will depart this cafe in 30 minutes. No more, no less. If you are not on the coach at that time, he adds, then I guess I'll see you the next day at this time then. He laughs to himself, and lighting a fresh cigarette, steps back from the morning heat into the glass lobby of the diner we are parked in front of. We should be in Sioux Falls by late afternoon, I hear him declare to one of the other passengers, also smoking in the entryway. Yep, just in time for the heat to break at evening. My brother Aaron and I hurry past and into the cooled interior of the building, looking for something sweet for breakfast. A tall, cylindrical case stands near the front of the entry, near where the cash register and cigarette machine are. Its mirrored interior is illuminated with fluorescent tubing, casting harsh white light on pies of all kinds displayed prominently on the circular shelves. Every 30 seconds or so, a mechanism within the case engages, and the pies rotate. Their shelves, that is, a quarter turn. It's like the Space Needle, I tell my brother. You know, the restaurant at the top. It turns like that. My brother is small, however, and doesn't make the connection to the rotating restaurant I'm speaking of. Instead, his mind is fixed upon the immediate procurement of blueberry pie, cut in slices and displayed on individual styrofoam plates within the case. Each plate, tightly, excruciatingly wrapped with generous saran wrap, gelatinous blueberries oozing out of the sides. I am reminded for a moment of my favorite book, the one I keep rereading, Wrapped for Eternity, A Pharaoh's Journey to Heaven, and can't help thinking of the pies wrapped in the case before me. The lobby, the bathrooms, the dining area, all of it smells like air-conditioned smoke, and I feel better outside. I crouch alongside my brother in the hot shade of the diner's wide modern eaves, and nestled against the false lava rock exterior, we devour our pies respectively. I have chosen cherry pie, and I am disappointed. The flavor is sour and not as sweet as what I had hoped. I try repeatedly to trade with Aaron, who ordered the blueberry, and seems to be quite happy with his decision. He won't trade, and I am aggravated, eating my sour cherry pie begrudgingly and watching the unusual collection of humanity begin to board the coach for departure. The driver arrives, whistles loudly, bringing both hands to his mouth, and whistles again. "All aboard! Everybody aboard!" in his accent, so very different from where we are from. The bus feels cool, and I am glad for this, and the tinted windows again are easier on my eyes. The world outside the coach, the diner, and parking lot now a soft, muted green, like in a film or a dream in a film. Before the front door is closed, the driver walks down the row of seats and counting heads, using his fingers to point and pass each respective seat and its occupants. 2, 4, 6, 8. His numbers come out of his mouth slow and regulated, and I know that he has done this task 1,000 times, maybe more. At last, every passenger accounted for, the bus lurches back into traffic and onto the dusty highway, the badlands and scrub brush, sagebrush, gently tossed about roadside in the dry heat of the morning Dakotas. Before long, the engine's drone makes me fall asleep as well, and I think to myself, wonder where all the trees are here, and buffalo. Where are the buffalo? And I'm fast asleep. I'm shaken gently awake by the arm and shoulder. "Wake up, Adam," and it's my mother's voice. "We're here." It is by now late afternoon, or perhaps even later. The bus's engine is quiet, and passengers, many of whom my mom has gotten to know personally, are disembarking the coach. My large family is waiting for everyone else to depart before organizing ourselves enough to leave as well. It feels like everyone who passes us gives my mother a personal farewell. In fact, some pass her small pieces of paper, addresses, I believe. It makes me feel good to know that these people are warm to her, and she will in fact stay in touch, as she may, with only letters or perhaps occasional phone calls with some of them she has met for years to come. Perhaps she still does. I wouldn't be surprised. The lobby of the Sioux Falls bus station is much smaller and less scary than ours at home. Though not equipped with a cafe or even a pinball machine, the waiting lobby has instead cordoned off a generous area, 3 open rooms that greet those arriving to the city with full-scale dioramas of the Dakota Prairie, as well as fine examples of taxidermied wild creatures that reside there. Leaning against the railing, we can see gopher, deer, elk, rabbit, and prairie dogs, all in realistic poses, a still life of sorts, complete with a realistic painted background of the wide open land. In the last window, several grouse are disrupted by a would-be pioneer family's covered wagon. In the grove of birch trees, just out of view of the startled birds, a wax figure of an American Indian in traditional dress peers out at the unsuspecting family through plastic leaves. His face is stern, and he shades his concerned eyes dramatically with one hand for a better view. The pioneer family, wax figures who look much like myself, never even knew he was there. And so it is, we are all here, and waiting patiently as 3 young boys are able, our respective plastic shopping bags in hand. Soon Aunt Josephine, Aunt Mary, Aunt Sarah, and perhaps even my father's mother, Grandma Sophie herself, will arrive and deliver us back to her little house where we will stay. Looking back, I can write about, remember well, so many of the people, relatives, and places we would otherwise have not gotten an opportunity to know without these regular bus trips. I still wish that I could visit Space Mountain and the magical kingdoms that are found that are unique to California, and perhaps I will someday. But to recall the taste of strawberry shortcake in the warm, humid evening of great-grandparents' wooden porch, lemonade, cousins, and the sound of warm family voices from within an old farmhouse is an irreplaceable gift, and certainly worthy of the bus trip that brought us here together. Thank you.
Adam, that is so beautiful. Your description, your vivid memory of the landscape, of the feeling of that is so incredible.
Aw, shucks.
This is why you are one of my favorite writers ever.
It's pretty special to share. It's a different time for sure. And yeah.
So I can't help but think that you were so upset about that sour cherry pie.
I still am.
Is that why you became a baker?
Oh, God. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And as somebody who, obviously, I'm going to read my story next about traveling on the Greyhound bus. The description of the blue liquid in the bathroom. I know it well, and the turmoils and the tragedy in my own mind of that experience is still with me today.
How many hours can you wait so you don't have to go to the bathroom back there? God.
Well, thank you. You carry, you capture the period of the 1970s and the nostalgia. You clearly have a lot of nostalgia for that time frame. Do you want to expel on that, like your thoughts on that?
No, I think that it kind of, I was talking about it a little bit, that I early on kind of found that it meant a lot to me to sort of recollect or document in my own way, not only my own experience, but the kind of experience of places and people who are no longer here. And it really, I don't know, it's exciting for me, and it makes me feel relevant, or that somehow we relate things happening possibly in the future to what took place in the past. And I think artistically, if I can kind of drum something up that makes sense and is gentle to listen to, that might be a guide or a gift in some way.
Well, thank you for sharing it. You do it so beautifully.
So far away, doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore. Be so fine to see your face at my door. It doesn't help to know you're just time away. Long ago I reached for you and there you stood. Holding you again could only do me good. How I wish I could, but you're so
The first ever travel I would do was taking the Greyhound bus from downtown Chicago to Rock Island, Illinois. My grandmother, Violet Fitzpatrick, lived even farther, about 20 miles, on long, empty rural roads where corn stalks would sway in the wind with endless blue skies behind them, a kind of dance. Finally, to arrive to a two-story white farmhouse outside of a town called Orion, Illinois, in the Quad Cities. My mother, a complex woman of the times, a first or second generation divorcee, single mother of too many children on her own, would drop us off at the Greyhound station. It was the middle-late 70s, and my sisters and I, piling onto the bus with random clothes and paper bags, little food, and not much else, would be sent on our way. The bus seemed so spacious. The seats were enormous, with a nubbly, bulbous polyester upholstery fabric that I imagine would be good for scratching an itch. It was so easy to slump down into these seats and wait out your time. Most of the time, the three of us would sit together, but often we would get there late, and the seats would be filled, and we would be separated. On one of these occasions, I remember sitting next to an older black lady. She had her head against the window, saw me coming in, and welcomed me to sit near her, in a protective way, with a big smile. She made me feel safe. I was the youngest of my sisters and quite shy, and so I sat near to her, she herself in her own thoughts. Periodically, she would pull out a bottle and drink from it. Later, I would be able to recognize that smell as some kind of hard liquor. She sat quietly and drank and stared out the long windows onto the open flat plains of Illinois. I myself sat quietly and looked at her, and from her to the open window, hearing the sounds of the bus, waiting to pull into stations, weird, desolate stations or diners in small towns with tired people waiting to file onto the bus, waiting to reunite with my sisters, waiting endlessly the time to get to my grandmother's stop. Knowing that at the end of this ride, there would be a 7-Up waiting for me at her farmhouse, and if I was lucky, there would be Eagle brand potato chips and budding sliced lunch meat with soft white bread. For lunches, she would make roasted potatoes and sides of ham, wherein the top of the stove held an old tin can that had lard or renderings from cooking meat, and the leftovers. And the leftovers would be used for the next meal. The cellar was filled with canned goods, pickles, ketchup, green beans, carrots, and creamed corn. It was a dark, damp room with white double doors that opened from the ground outside with stairs that went down and under. It was a room that should have frightened me, with the only light coming from the open doors. A room where cousins would love to play pranks in and around. It was also the room where the washing of clothes was done, in one of those antiquated washing machines that was open so you could see the mechanisms actually spinning back and forth and around. This is the only room that I've ever seen one of these machines. Her house had everything ours did not. An abundance of food being one of them. A tall willow tree that always invited me to hang from it and swing until I was tired, listening to the cicadas at sunset with humidity in the air. She had a wrapping staircase I could slide down, crawl up, which led to warm rooms with large windows that didn't open very often, quiet with the sounds of wasps caught by the sun, buzzing and hitting the window. This always intrigued me. From these windows, you could see the same cornfields swaying in the wind for miles and miles. Later, these fields would be filled in with soybeans, as so much of Illinois would be. Small family farms taken over by giant farming. This place would be the first place I would travel to and continue to travel to for many years to come. The Greyhound bus is still the only direct way to get to this area if you don't have a car. And although I haven't been on a Greyhound in quite a while, I can't imagine it's changed much, and I know for sure the landscape of the back roads look pretty much the same in Illinois.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, we are the Cats and Jammer Follies, Travel Tales. Next week, if you want to come back, we're going to have some more stories. Visit some other cities. Not sure exactly where or when. Well, when, yes, but where? I don't know. Wherever the world wants to take us. Thank you again, and we will see you next week.
I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake.